just extend a warm welcome to you all this morning. We're going to be finishing off looking at the 11th chapter of Mark's Gospel. A chapter within the Gospel that contains a strange story. A story in which the Lord comes to a fig tree expecting to find something to nourish his hunger. And discovering no fruit, we're told that he curses the tree. And this is a strange action on one who is the embodiment of love, certainly in the literal sense. It seems a harsh thing to do, even though we're only talking about a tree. But what highlights this, and perhaps jars, is the fact that the scripture says that it wasn't the time or the season for figs. And there are a lot of strange things in the literal sense of the word. And I believe that they are there in order to catch our attention. At one level, they are there so that they do jar us and draw us into the text and excite questions within our mind. What is the Lord trying to say to us with regard to this tree? We're reading this morning from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 11, reading verses 12 through to 33. Now the next day, when they had come out from Bethany, he was hungry. And seeing from afar a fig tree having leaves, he went to see if perhaps he would find something on it. When he came to it, he found nothing but leaves, for it was not the season for figs. In response, Jesus said to it, "Let no one eat fruit from you ever again." And his disciples heard it. So they came to Jerusalem. Then Jesus went into the temple and began to drive out those who had bought and sold in the temple and overturned the tables of the money changers and the seats of those who sold doves. And he would not allow anyone to carry wares through the temple. Then he taught, saying to them, "Is it not written, 'My house shall be called a house of prayer for all nations,' but you have made it a den of thieves?" And the scribes and the chief priests heard it and sought how they might destroy him, for they feared him, because all the people were astonished at his teaching. When evening had come, he went out of the city. Now in the morning, as they passed by, they saw the fig tree dried up from the roots. And Peter, remembering, said to him, "Rabbi, look, the fig tree which you cursed has withered away." So Jesus answered and said to them, "Have faith in God. For assuredly I say to you, whoever says to this mountain, 'Be removed and be cast into the sea,' and does not doubt in his heart, but believes that those things he says will be done, he will have whatever he says. Therefore I say to you, whatever things you ask when you pray, believe that you receive them, and you will have them. And whenever you stand praying, if you have anything against anyone, forgive him, that your Father in heaven may also forgive you your trespasses. But if you do not forgive, neither will your Father in heaven forgive your trespasses." Then they came again to Jerusalem, and as he was walking in the temple, the chief priests and the scribes and the elders came to him. And they said to him, "By what authority are you doing these things? And who gave you this authority to do these things?" But Jesus answered and said to them, "I will also ask you one question. Then answer me, and I will tell you by what authority I do these things. The baptism of John, was it from heaven or from men? Answer me." And they reasoned among themselves, saying, If we say from heaven, he will say, why then did you not believe him? But if we say from men, they feared the people, for all counted John to have been a prophet indeed. So they answered and said to Jesus, we do not know. And Jesus answered and said to them, neither will I tell you by what authority I do these things. A reading from the Heavenly Doctrines from the work Apocalypse Explained, paragraph 325. In the spiritual sense, by praying, desiring and asking is meant the life of love and charity. For to those who are in the life of love and charity, it is given from the Lord that they should ask. Therefore they ask nothing but what is good, and that is done unto them, because faith is also from the Lord. Therefore it is said, believe that ye shall receive them. And because prayers proceed from the life of charity, and are according to it, therefore in order that it may be done according to the prayers, it is also said, but when you stand praying, forgive, if ye have aught against any. Because prayers are according to the nature of man's heart, and consequently prayers offered up when the heart is in evil are not true prayers of worship. It is therefore said, if I have regarded iniquity in my heart, the Lord will not hear, by which is signified that he will not receive such worship. The heart of man is his love, and the love of man is his very life. Consequently, a man's prayers are according to the nature of his love, or according to the quality of his life. Hence it follows that prayers signify the life of his love and charity, and that this life is meant by prayers. In the spiritual sense, a man continually prays when he is in the life of charity, although not with the mouth, yet with the heart. For that which is of the love is continually in the thought, even when he is unconscious of it, according to what is said in the doctrine of the New Jerusalem. Hence it is also evident that prayer in the spiritual sense denotes worship from love. So we come to this strange story of the Lord's conduct in relation to this tree. And if we had to understand this story, then we have to move out of the literal sense, which has caught our attention, and begin to look at what this could possibly mean spiritually. And how do we do that? Well, we can do that through asking a question. We could ask the question, what is the Lord seeking from us, and why? What is his hunger? What is it he desires? Trees are the product of seeds. And of course, seeds grow into trees. They bear leaves and they bear fruit. And seeds, from a spiritual perspective, are ideas that can be planted in our minds. They are truths. And these truths, as we meditate upon them and look to put them into practice in life, can grow and develop and become more structured and visible. And they have interrelated branches which represent the different directions that thought can take. And so the tree represents, in a sense, a body of knowledge. But it is living. It is a living thing. And so this knowledge within us also is living. It has roots, and its roots are based in the Lord. And as these spiritual principles are cultivated within us, so they can fill our mind, give us ways of seeing, of perceiving things. And so it is that this tree is connected with a way of seeing. And that way of seeing is related to the condition of the church in Jesus' time. And that condition is personified in his conflict with the scribes and the Pharisees, which we also see in this story. And so Jesus comes to the tree looking to have his hunger met. But there is no fruit. And it says that it isn't the season for figs. And if we just lift our minds a little, we can understand that a season represents a period of time. And the period of time, in terms of our own life, are the states that we pass through. So in saying that the season was not for figs, that it was not time for figs, what the Lord is saying is that the particular state represented by this tree cannot deliver fruit, and that is a problem. So spiritually, we're talking about a state of life. A state of life that cannot bear fruit. And so as we explore this, we'll come to see that this state is in effect knowledge without the desire to put it to use. There's a state of wanting knowledge for its own sake. It is that state of excitement about searching the Word, searching the doctrines, finding all sorts of interesting things, but not having any regard for how these things might be applied in the way we meet one another and others. How it might be applied to our own thought processes and affectional aspects. Seen in the light of loving our neighbor or charity. Fascinating thing about our reading, if you picked it up, is that prayer is a product of the life. It's not about the words we say. It's really about the heart we bring to life, the attitudes we bring to life. Our life, if you will, is a prayer. And what life gives us is the answer to our prayer, to the way we approach life. So if our minds are full of criticisms and judgments, that is the prayer we take to life. And what we get back is anxiety, angst, anger, because we meet life with our state. And of course, we're told time and time again throughout the illustrations of the stories in the Gospel and how they can be understood from the writings of the new church that knowledge or truth leads to good if it is really true. Truth only ever leads to good. So the things that we call truths, if they are not leading us to good, then they are not real truths for us. In fact, we can become so absorbed in truths and ideas as a means of avoiding having to apply things to life, of having to be a more loving and understanding person. And this aspect of our own nature is captured in the way the scribes and the Pharisees approached the Lord and their attitude towards him, constantly trying to undermine his authority, trying to undermine the plain teaching of the Word. Love your neighbor. It's a very clear, plain teaching. Pharisees would take that, manipulate it in all sorts of ways as to what it meant, spend hours in debate about what it meant, But when the living embodiment of that love was presented to them, they couldn't see it. So where knowledge is being built up, there must be balance. There must be a desire for application. These two things go hand in hand and must always go hand in hand. If they're not in that balance, then it leads to barrenness. And this happens for all of us, those of us walking the spiritual path. When you are applying this knowledge to your life, you will experience barrenness. But the barrenness is there to move you on, to get you to seek deeper, to seek how these things can be applied in my life and my relationships with others. But if we hold off, if we will not reflect and practice the life of spiritual repentance, then that knowledge can become a curse. Because the barrenness then becomes something terminal. It leads to no fruit being born. And because that fruit is not there, because that will to do what is good is not there, the Lord has nothing in us that He can draw us on with. And so His desire for our salvation cannot be fulfilled. He yearns and He hungers that we might enter into the fullness of the life of heaven. But if we will not do according to His word, He cannot help us. We must constantly be in the effort to apply the truths we know, to move with the understanding we have, and put it into practice in life. In the world, there are states of not trying. There are states of trying and failing. And there are states of trying and succeeding. In the natural realm, we have those three aspects to trying. Spiritually, there are only two. There is not trying, and there is trying. And if you are trying, if you are in the effort, you will not fail. You cannot fail. There is no trying and failing in spiritual things. If we are seeking the Lord, seeking to know His will, we will succeed, despite what appearances might tell us. Without making the effort, what happens, or the condition that results, is described by the temple and the state that we see in the temple. The temple is our minds, our understanding of spiritual things. And in the temple, we have the ground of our thinking. And what the Lord is wanting to do is He's wanting to clear that so that we can see things clearly, so that we can see how to apply His truths in ways that bring His mercy and compassion to people. And not just to other people, but in our own attitudes towards ourselves. We need His mercy and compassion when we view our own states of life. And if we are in the effort, then we give the Lord permission to enter in and to bring His mercy and His compassion and His love and His goodness, so that we can look with soft eyes, not the hard, critical eyes. And so it is that the Lord, who is God's desire for our salvation, is seen here to enter into the very center of our thinking with regard to spiritual things. And what does he find in there? Well, he finds a lot of commerce going on. And when the writings describe this commerce as using spiritual things for self-gain, so using the knowledge that we have of spiritual things and principles, perhaps to make ourselves think that, you know, we're better than others. This is what the thieves are, the den of robbers are, with regard to the temple. Those aspects of using spiritual things for personal gain. Judging others, criticizing others, envy, malice, backbiting, gossiping. When you have spiritual knowledge and you engage in these things, it comes from a sense of self-merit, a sense of being better than somebody else. And if these things are rising up in us, we're in desperate need of the Lord's mercy and compassion. So it is that the Lord makes a very deliberate response. He enters and he overturns the tables. And so if those things are within us, criticizing, gossiping, judging others, if these things are rising up within us, the Lord is wanting to turn over the table of our thinking. Help us to see things in a new way. To challenge us. And that is what the Word does. For the Lord is the Word. And if we are serious about the Word, then we will be challenged. Aspects of our nature will be revealed. But the motivation is always mercy, compassion, a genuine concern for our salvation, our welfare, our spiritual welfare. The Lord cannot operate from any other motive than that, for he is love and wisdom itself. And so they leave the temple and they come back. And Peter notices that the tree has withered from the root. And the tree has withered, or the tree withers within a person when they will not do what the Lord requires of them. Because if a person will not do according to the knowledge and understanding that they have, the Lord, who is life itself, cannot enter in. The life cannot be sustained. And so we see that this tree, it only had leaves on it. It had no fruit. And leaves in the Word represent truths. And fruit represents love that comes from those truths. And so that love is not there. The Word had been so corrupted at this point of history that nothing could be done for those who were captured within the state of the religious system of the day. And that is why the Lord had to come. The human race was on the brink. And despite how we think, we too can be on the brink. Your ability to think about the things that have to do with love, wisdom, truth, spiritual knowledge, in and of yourself, you have no capacity to think with regard to those things from a loving and compassionate base. It is the Lord in you that hungers for these things. And we have to hold that truth. Because if we don't, we can get into self-merit, thinking that we are something we are not, So we must remember with all humility that even our desire to seek for a spiritual life is from the Lord and the Lord alone. And so Peter mentions this aspect of the tree, and how does the Lord respond? Well, the Lord talks about being able to pray, and if you pray that this mountain be lifted up and cast into the sea, it'll happen. He says, if you believe, then whatever you ask, you will receive. We have to be careful that we do not misunderstand what the Lord is talking about here. We have to see this in the context of the fig tree and the temple, because it is in the series. It continues on. It's a progression of ideas. And what the Lord is laying out for us here is that when we are seeking and praying in accordance with His will, then of course these things will be answered. Of course we will receive these things. And we've been talking about the need to reflect on those aspects that rise up within us that are grounded in our selfishness or our tendency towards selfish behavior. And this is what the mountain being spoken about here is. If we will reflect on our thought life and our affectional life, and we seek the Lord's aid to have those things taken out of our life, then He will answer our prayer. Of course He will, because His concern is for our spiritual well-being. And everything He does, every action, every word spoken, has that end in view, our spiritual well-being. And if we will not pray to have these things removed, then they will become mountains in our life. They will obscure our view. They will block the way of love being fulfilled within us. And so this teaching encourages us to reflect on the things that pass through our life, and to ask the Lord that they may be cast into the sea. That is where they have come from, for the sea here represents the depths of the hells out of which these aspects of thinking and feeling arise that put me first to the detriment of others. So if we will seek His aid in having these things removed, He will be our deliverer. He will fulfill those desires. Because as we progress in this way on the spiritual path, our desires will be salvation of our souls and the salvation of others. We will work on ourselves because that is the only way we can become freer to help others. So those two things will go hand in hand. We will work on ourselves and we will work with others from compassion and mercy and goodness, which is what the Lord freely gives us, which is His life. And we see that this praying is in connection with our willingness to forgive others. Says that we have to release others and then pray. And this releasing of others is to give up being offended by others. Give up holding on to those offenses and letting them govern our life, drawing us into deeper states of misery and hardness and lack of compassion and no mercy. Giving up our thought that we have a right to be treated better. What is. What comes, comes. We choose what we hold on to. We choose our life moment by moment. There is no justification in the word or in the teachings of the church for hanging on to negative states of life. None whatsoever. Those states of life are hell in us, and they will wreak havoc if we choose to hang on to them. Yes, it can be difficult. It can be difficult to let go. But what the Lord is clearly saying here is that if we will seek His aid, they will be cast into the sea from which they came. The scribes and the Pharisees dreamt up countless numbers of reasonings and justifications for where they sat and stood. They dreamt up ways of using the word to shut love out. What an irony. They constantly approached Jesus, challenging His authority. And self-centered aspects within us will constantly rise up and challenge the authority of the word in our lives. We're hanging on to some negative state. The word today teaches us that we are not to hang on to it. But if that thing is bound to us, there will be a lot of buts that come up, trying to justify why we choose to hang on to that thing. But all that does is nullify the operation of the word in our lives, which is wanting to bring us into states of love, mercy, compassion, states of peace. There is no peace in holding something against another person. And it's remarkable how the mind works. We hold things against people thinking that they deserve it, and they can be totally oblivious to what's going on within our own minds. It's us that's affected. And it's not only us, but it's those around us, because we can't then operate the way we should, the way we've been created to operate. We become desensitized to the needs of those around us. Jesus challenged the scribes in regard to John. Whose baptism is it? And you see their reasoning there. They're trying to play off one thing against the other, trying to be smart. But it's a very clear question. And they knew the answer. They knew the answer. And the baptism of John, which we looked at the very start of the look at Mark's Gospel, is the clear teachings of the literal sense of the word. The Ten Commandments. These sorts of things. The Golden Rule. Love your neighbor, love the Lord. These are clear, clear teachings. And this loving is not just something that's felt. It's actually felt, but it's manifest in action. We will engage in the baptism of John if we love the Lord and love our neighbour. We will do it. It's just a natural part of that love. So we will reflect on the thoughts that pass through our minds. We will call them to task. We will recognise what prevents that love being expressed in a fuller way. And we will seek the Lord's assistance to have it dealt with. That's what loving the Lord is. That's what loving our neighbour is. It's actually doing those things. If we don't do, we're like a fig tree without fruit that can't receive the life of love and charity. Amen.